Hello, everyone, and welcome to Energy Security Cubed, where we explore the pillars that form the nexus of energy security in Canada and the world, energy, economics, and the environment. I am your host, CEO and President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Kelly Ogle. On today's episode, recorded August 24, 2021, we explore New Zealand's unique energy system with a focus on the security and sustainability of their natural gas supply. Really pleased to have joining me today from Wellington, New Zealand, John Carnegie. John is the Chief Executive of Energy Resources Aotearoa. He was previously the Executive Director of the Business New Zealand Energy Council and has nearly three decades' experience in public policy and energy markets, specializing in energy, climate change, and resource management policy. Welcome, John. Glad to have you aboard.
Thank you. Delight to be here.
Let's start off with giving our listeners an overview of what Energy Resources Aotearoa is and what you do.
Delighted to. Well, look, actually, we've been on a bit of a journey of change over the last year or so. And earlier this year, we changed our name from the Petroleum Exploration and Production Association of New Zealand, so we were known as PPANS, to Energy Resources Aotearoa. And actually, we did this to reflect our new strategic approach and move into being the voice of a successful and resilient energy resources sector. Especially based around a role that a vibrant gas market can play in a transition to a low emissions future. So we now represent nearly 40 energy intensive businesses, from explorers and producers to distributors and users of natural resources like oil, LPG and natural gas. We also represent New Zealand's largest oil and gas producers. In terms of what we stand for, well, we stand for a balanced energy system with balanced energy choices as we transition. One that balances, it's known as the energy trilemma, one that balances reliability, affordability, and sustainability, because we think actually if you get those three factors out of whack, you run into some problems. And we've been seeing that a bit here recently in New Zealand.
Well, that's exactly the primary focus of this podcast, John, is Energy Security Cubed, suggesting the energy, the environment, and economics. All energy needs to be affordable and sustainable, or it doesn't really fit the future of any kind of schematic. So, you know, like us in Canada, New Zealand produces much of its electricity from renewables, similar to Canada, Iceland, and Norway. You accomplish this largely from hydro and geothermal, as Canada does, largely hydro, which are both reliable and dispatchable. However, the Energy in New Zealand 2020 report sees a dramatic increase in the amount of wind power in its future electric energy mix, ergo sometimes severe intermittency. Natural gas can be used to manage intermittency. Do you see a larger role in the electrical mix in the future based on these what I would call aspirational goals toward renewables?
Well, yes, of course, absolutely. In fact, as we become more dependent on weather-based sources of electricity, and we as a country currently hover around, I don't know, anywhere between 80 and 85% renewable electricity, though actually it's important to add a caveat to that for a variety of reasons. We've imported and burnt a record amount of coal in recent years. So we think the role of natural gas as a backup becomes even more important. And in fact, we saw this just a few weeks ago when we actually had electricity blackouts across our North Island. Now, the exact causes of those blackouts are still being investigated. But actually, it's clear. One of the things that's actually quite clear is that unreliable sources of intermittent renewable energy actually just couldn't keep up. And at various times, in fact, there was 0 megawatts being generated from our wind capacity. So without natural gas and, in fact, coal, those blackouts could have, in fact, been much, much worse. So we think that gas is the ideal partner to an expansion in renewable generation. We need a system that has a portfolio of fuels available to it And one that balances, as I said, those three factors: reliability, affordability, and sustainability. Even our Climate Change Commission, in its groundbreaking report from earlier this year, saw a role for natural gas continuing in our electricity system at least out till 2050.
So I'll just go a little bit off script here, John, but it seems like there's mixed messages, right? Like it's the hardcore, what I would call harder core, more adamant renewables, that being wind and solar, seem to capture the narrative. How do we change that?
Well, I think a lot of it's around educating the general public about the attributes and the desirability of those attributes in the electricity system, and actually also just in terms of the use of gas in their homes. Gas is often taken for granted as a fuel.
Yeah, because of the it's resilient and uninterruptible, right? It's just there. Well, until it isn't.
that's exactly right. And I guess the other thing is, look, we as a organisation, and in fact as a country, we're on board with aspirational goals to increase the percentage of renewable electricity and in fact renewable energy. But there has to be affordable, commercial, and reliable alternatives that aren't actually dependent on subsidies to survive. You know, and in the absence of those things, well, gas is going to be the fuel, the reliable and affordable fuel that fills the gap.
Yeah, every day in my own research and the work we do and readings, and it's very troubling to see the pushback against natural gas as a, you know, and you can buzzword it by using the word transition or whatever, but it defies logic to not be more cognizant and more proactive with the use of natural gas. So, you know, just as I was just reading before we came on, John, about Newsom in California talking about they're building 5 natural gas power plants for intermittency here that are going to be working for the next 5 years without ever speaking to the fact that, we're not just on this clear path to renewables taking care of everything. And unfortunately, it's very unfortunate. Anyways, I'm moving on. Like we do in Canada, John, New Zealand imports and exports both oil and coal, and its natural gas needs are exclusively met by domestic production, as we do in Canada, and we export natural gas too, geographically the way you are. That's not the case, but it's funny, in 2018, your government banned new offshore oil and gas exploration as part of its plans to reduce emissions. However, earlier this year, as our listeners may not be aware, the Minister of Energy of New Zealand requested an investigation into the security of New Zealand's natural gas supply after a large reduction in gas production due to decline, I would guess. I'm just guessing at that, John, but, you know, fossil fuel production declines. The only thing you know today when you start the well is it's going to make less tomorrow.
That's right.
So can you explain what are the more existential reasoning behind these government decisions and what other factors might be at play and what does the future look like in this scenario?
Well, look, actually many of our fields are coming to the end of their natural lives. But as you've alluded to, there are a lot of policy headwinds that the oil and gas sector is facing right now, which is actually making it even harder to get the investment we need away. And this, the hostile operating environment for the sector in New Zealand, actually at the moment is a real challenge. So for example, the government, we talked about an aspirational target. Well, the government has actually set a goal of completely removing natural gas from the electricity system by 2030, actually against the advice of its Climate Change Commission. It's got policy work underway that's aimed at removing natural gas from industrial process heat. There's been talk of a ban of new customer gas connections. And to almost round that off, there are current proposals for new, tougher and actually retrospective decommissioning rules for the upstream, including bringing on into place unlimited perpetual liability, even once you've transferred the asset. So, you know, combined with the 2018 expiration ban that you referred to, this has actually created massive uncertainty over the long-term future of our natural gas supply. And to your point about the investigation, you know, there has been, in response to that, a report earlier this year from our gas market regulator, who actually noted that there may not be enough natural gas supplied to keep the lights on and ensure security of supply for electricity by 2026.
That's so, not very far away.
That's not very far away. And of course, there is enough 2P gas in the ground to meet mass market, industrial and power generation demand. Well, the gas market regulator said at least until 2035. And of course, again, in terms of the life cycles of the upstream, again, that's not very far away. And there is also plenty of contingent gas. However, this requires development and the right investment climate. And that's the real concern that we face here in New Zealand, that the environment in which the upstream will be investing is incredibly negative. And that's going to have downstream implications for our large users and the health of our economy.
So just for our listeners' information, 2P means proven reserves, probable reserves, and then the contingent are potential reserves. So John's making a great point that totally aligns with Canadian angst in the energy sector with the lack of investment because of the regulatory hurdles or potential pitfalls of investing in the sector. And I, you know, those probable, and I'm not ranting, I'm just commenting, those probable and contingent resources all need capital. The proven producing reserves you might be able to get with existing cash flows, but you need new capital to expand those other resources, being the probable and contingent. And as John states, your sector is feeling the pressure of underinvestment, correct?
Well, yes, look, that's exactly right. But what you can wrap around that, the clearly stated government policy positions that doesn't want gas in the electricity system. So obviously one of the largest users of our gas. And at the same time, it wants to have security of supply. And so our sector is at the sharp end of trying to square that circle, which is incredibly difficult, given the signals in the market.
So, John, does that bring up a discussion of whether, being Machiavellian, that your leadership, your political leadership would discuss LNG exports? Like, could New Zealand possibly be a gas exporter from its resources?
A gas exporter? Potentially, if there was the capability and ability to explore new permit areas, but unfortunately, those have all been taken off the table. So, if anything, New Zealand's likely to end up importing
as an importer
LNG. I mean, it's a real shame. When I've been in this role for nearly 2 years, and at the outset, I talked about how we were actually sleepwalking to importing LNG. I have to say, in the last 6 months, I've changed that to actually, I think we've now picked up the pace to a jog.
Yeah.
Where it's now almost becoming inevitable. And in fact, there is an investigation underway right now by the gas market regulator looking at the feasibility of New Zealand importing LNG. We, of course, think that's crazy. Given that we have plenty of natural gas resources right here that we could be using if only we could explore for them. And in fact, actually, we all look with envy across the Tasman Sea. We
sure.
colloquially know it as the ditch. We look across the ditch where the Australian government is trumpeting a gas-led recovery to the economic damage created by its response to COVID-19. And I think one of the key lessons for policymakers out of all of this is that they seem to forget that mobile capital is in fact mobile. So it will look for the most productive and efficient home. And we're going to start suffering from that here in New Zealand.
You're reading our mail in Canada, John. It's exactly the same case. It's, capital's fungible. It's like water running from one place to another. It'll find the easiest place to get to.
Yep.
And yep. Immediately.
That's exactly right.
You know, it's very, very troubling to see a very forward economy and a country and economy like New Zealand's that's, you know, literally out there on an island, has been a very successful place to live, do business, and be an exporter and or importer of goods, suffering like this. Let's go a little bit deeper into the weeds about the natural gas. Most of it, I'm assuming, is consumed by industry, including food processing and chemical manufacturing. When one of these major gas fields had to reduce production in 2018, industrial consumers of natural gas took a major hit. You spoke briefly about this, John, about the future of industry in New Zealand and those that depend on natural gas as a key input in their cost of goods sold. Could you go a little deeper into that? I think it's important that people understand this.
Yeah, well, look, we're deeply worried about the downstream economic implication of an absence of security of supply. And actually, we don't just think this is a long-term issue. We actually think it's a right now issue. While you drew a comparison between Canada and New Zealand in terms of our hydro-dominated electricity systems, actually, our hydro system is, I think it holds a maximum of 6 weeks storage. So not much storage, and it's subject to dry years.
Sure.
And so this year, actually, it was a dry year for our hydro lakes. And on top of that, we had some temporary gas shortages, as you've alluded to. And the net effect of both of those things is that gas and electricity prices actually skyrocketed. And that caused a lot of pain for our industrial sector with job losses and closures. And in fact, you know, we've got our largest gas user. It uses roughly somewhere between 40 to 50% of our domestically produced gas, actually having to, the methanol producer, actually closed some methanol trains, which, you know, isn't an ideal situation when you've got your major industrial and your exporters throttling back production because there's an absence of gas. And so our worry actually is what happens in the years ahead for the next dry year, as we actually become more dependent, not less, on renewable electricity. But at the same time, as I said, many of our gas fields are reaching the end of their lives, and the investment climate gets worse all the while when we don't have economically viable renewable alternatives that can't survive without massive subsidies. Again, as you alluded to, but we're an island a long way from any other nation. And unlike our Northern Hemisphere friends, we simply cannot plug into gas pipelines from other countries. So we're dependent on our own resources, and we have gas here, and we think that we should be using it here.
So, John, correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize for my ignorance, but you recently elected a very progressive prime minister not that long ago, right? Like last year. Is that not true?
Yes, Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah, in 2020, right?
Yes, but that was her second term. She was prime minister elected also in 2017, so she's into her second term.
And I guess I try not to be overly political, but it seems to me very frustrating that how can we turn this ship around? I guess does it go back to that educational issue? I can't believe how frustrated industry and businesses must be in New Zealand over this.
Well, look, I think it's a matter of making sure that there is sufficient understanding about the benefits around the role of gas. But look, everyone in New Zealand is on board with the goals that the government aspires to. And we've got legislated targets around net zero carbon by 2050. So there's no dispute with any of those. The issue is really about how we get from point A to point B in a way that maintains our overall prosperity as a nation. And I think that's quite important, because when we focus on that, gas will always have a role in ensuring that there is affordable, reliable energy for our economy.
John, is there any, and I get, I'm going off script again here, but is there any discussion of CCUS in, in carbon capture and in New Zealand. I apologize again for my ignorance about your energy system, but to me, that in the longer term, that answers a lot of the questions of how you make the gas as the transitory fossil fuel make it work, because it coincides with lower emissions.
And look, we couldn't agree more. Look, there is a conversation emerging around the role of carbon capture and storage. It's a nascent conversation. Our recently established National New Energy Centre, RARK, has the investigation of CCS as one of its three top priorities, which we're delighted with. And we think that it will progressively bubble to the surface as the reality around how difficult it will be to achieve these targets emerges. We think that CCS has a role in New Zealand to play as we meet our targets.
How about hydrogen?
Look, there again, there's a lot of conversation around hydrogen, but it's predominantly around green, so using electricity to create hydrogen. We actually think that there is a solid role for blue hydrogen, so gas steam reformed hydrogen,
yep.
With carbon capture and storage. And we think that because we think that it will help create and grow the domestic market and our international export capability. While green hydrogen becomes economic, because we think green hydrogen, again, without subsidies, won't be economic for quite some time.
Well, and then is it ever, like, I don't want to be a troglodyte, but it just seems to me that it comes back to the affordability question with all forms of energy. And you know, there was a time when most people couldn't afford whale oil so that they could have lit candles, right? Like, it's no different. It's just it's the same, only different. So,
John, well, I agree, and I think that, you know, green hydrogen may well have its time in the sun, but possibly not in my lifetime.
I agree. We can only hope that the polity of our countries stands up and takes notice of the affordability issue, and takes our leadership and the policymakers to task, and sort of forces the hand of reality with energy systems. John,
one of my favorite quotes is by Aldous Huxley, which is, facts do not cease to be facts simply because they are ignored. And that will always be true.
Very, very, very well said, John. We always have one last question for our esteemed guests. And thanks again for coming on, John. What are you reading for pleasure these days?
Well, actually, I'm a fan of historical fiction. So I've been reading the third in the trilogy of Hilary Mantel's book, The Mirror and the Light, around Thomas Cromwell in Tudor England. It's a riveting read.
Really? I'm writing that down. Well, we'll have it up on the podcast, on the website. And that's not something I'm aware of. And I love historical fiction as well, especially from those era. John, thanks again for coming on our podcast. We'll have you on again. Let's check in a year and see where New Zealand is, and what we're doing with we're both doing with the gas supplies and or demand.
I'd love to, and it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, John. Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Energy Security Cubed on the Canadian Global Affairs Podcast Network. You can find the CGAI Network on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you like the show, give it a rating. You can also find the Canadian Global Affairs Institute on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you like this episode and want to help us keep creating content, you can support us by donating at cgai.ca/support. Energy Security Cubed is brought to you by our team at CGAI. Thanks go out to our producer, Joe Kalnan, and to Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Kelly Ogle. Thanks for joining us on Energy Security Cubed.